Good morning. How's everybody doing today? Hope everybody's doing real well. I want to talk today about a subject that we all can identify with. I'll start out talking about a quote by Howard Dayton Jr. He said this, "Jesus talked much about money. 16 of the 38 parables were concerned with how to handle money and possessions. In the Gospels, an amazing 1 out of 10 verses deals directly with the subject of money. The Bible offers 500 verses on prayer, a little less than 500 verses on faith, but more than 2,000 verses on material possessions." So today we're going to talk about money. Some of God's greatest followers were very wealthy. The Bible tells us in Genesis chapter 13 and verse 2 that Abraham was very rich in cattle and in silver and gold. We know about Solomon's wealth, how much wealth he had. In 2 Chronicles chapter 9, we find there the time when the queen of Sheba came and visited with him, and she was just amazed at his wisdom and also how much wealth he had. It says that he made silver and gold just as normal as stones and pebbles. David was very wealthy also, his father. 1 Chronicles 29 and 28 says, "And David died in a good old age, full of days, riches, and honor." So David was very wealthy. Remember Job? Job had a lot to begin with. He lost it all, and he gained back more than he had. And he was considered to be a follower of God. He was very wealthy. Here's one maybe we don't think about. Joseph of Arimathea. Do you remember? Well, let's just read this verse, Matthew 27 and verse 57. "Then when even was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph, who himself was Jesus' disciple." And it goes on to talk about how this man owned the tomb where Jesus was laid. Called him a rich man, but yet he was Jesus' disciple. And he had opportunity to have a huge role in the story of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. In Matthew 25, we have the story of the talents. Remember the five-talent man and the three-talent man, the two-talent man and then the one-talent man, how they all gained. Well, a talent was essentially the same amount as 7 years' worth of labor. It was like the salary of seven years, and one man got five of those. So it was like 35 years' worth of work that he got all at once. What did he do with it? Well, he put it to work. And he multiplied it by two. And God said that was good. He was very wealthy. Money is spoken of in many positive ways in the Scriptures. In Proverbs, the 10th chapter, verse 15, the rich man's wealth is his strong city. And it says the destruction of the poor is their poverty. But the rich man's wealth, why is it a strong city? Because it's something they can depend on, they can lean on, it's going to provide them with many things. We read this verse several months back in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 19. "Every man also to whom God has given riches and wealth and has given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God." So the person is wealthy and then can enjoy it. In other words, they don't get so consumed with building wealth that they don't ever use it. We've heard of people who've got tremendous wealth and then they never do anything with it. The person who's got wealth but then can enjoy it and enjoy his person, this is a gift of God. I want to give you the first half of an old adage, old proverb, if you will. Money is a good servant. And we'll get to the last half later. Money is a good servant. So someone has wealth, they can do a lot with it. It can serve them well. Margaret Thatcher, you remember her? She had a role in history not too many years ago. She said this, "No one would remember the Good Samaritan if it only had good intentions." He had money as well. Do you remember what he did? He put this man up in a hotel and he bandaged his wounds and he came and he paid for this man to stay here, and he changed his wounds until he was well. So it wasn't just that he had good ideas. He had money to back it up and money to do something with it. So money can do a lot of good things for us. The scripture says a lot about money and good things about money. Haddon Robinson said this: for every verse in the Bible that tells us of the benefits of wealth, there are 10 that tells us of the dangers of wealth. And that's true. So there's some problems with money, and it's all in perspective. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9. Probably you just thought of this verse as soon as you found out what we were going to talk about today. We're going to read verses 9 and 10. But they that will be rich, remember that, they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So they that would be rich, that desire the wealth, that desire the money, they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. It didn't say money is the root of all evil, the love of money. Proverbs 28 and verse 20 says, a faithful man shall abound with blessings, but he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent. Jeremiah 6 and verse 13, for from the least of them, even unto the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness. And from the prophet even to the priest, everyone dealeth falsely. Covetousness, that is desiring something that we don't have, desiring what somebody else has, desiring something that would bring us happiness. In Ezekiel chapter 33, verse 31, and they that come unto thee as the people cometh, and they sit before thee as my people, and they hear thy words, but they will not do them. Okay, listen close. Here's the neat part in this verse. For with their mouth they show much love, but their heart goeth after covetousness. So they say love, they show love with their mouth, but deep inside they are consumed with material possessions. They are consumed with desiring something besides God. Hebrews 13, verse 5, let your conversation be without covetousness. Don't even talk about it. You hear people say things, oh, I wish I had this, if I only had that, I can't wait to do this or that, if it involves money. Colossians 3, verse 5 says, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. It's idolatry, meaning sometimes that material possessions come between us and God. And listen to this verse closely. Take this one and put it on your refrigerator at home. Luke 12, verse 15. This is Jesus talking. He says, and he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. Again, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. One more time. We really need to let that sink in and just absorb into our souls. For a man's life consisteth not in the things which he possesseth. What does it consist of? What did Jesus say? Matthew 22, 37 through 39. What did he say was the great commandment? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. That is what life consists of. What's he say next? Love thy neighbor as thyself. He says, on these hang all the law and the prophets. That's what's important. Putting God is completely and totally first and primary in our life. It's what we need most. If anything comes before that, then it takes God's role. It becomes a God to us. When we desire for physical things more than God, this is coveting. And ultimately, because we place an object, a physical object, in place of God, that's idolatry. In the past, if a person saw something that he or she wanted, but that person did not have money to buy it, they couldn't. But the desire for that object might fill their heart. And that was coveting. Covetousness. Now, there's an all too common solution for that problem. It's called credit. We know about credit. Credit cards and mortgages and house, second mortgages, home equity lines, and all of those things. How do we find ourselves so entangled in debt? How do we get there? It happens a lot of ways. A very common way is for to accumulate as we get older. The media tells us we need to have things, doesn't it? That's what we hear. That's what we see. Everything has a way of perpetuating itself. There are Walmart commercials that can sell anything. Lowe's and the folks that do home improvements places, they got together and they created HGTV to give us all these wonderful ideas and things that we can do in and around our houses and things of that sort. There's channels that let you just shop at home. I mean, you can get stuff any way you want to. We see it. We're just infiltrated with stuff. It happens gradually, perhaps over the course of a person's life. Perhaps in high school, a person works some, but because of the way things are in high school, you don't make a whole lot of money. You might make some, enough. A few people in high school are able to manage a car payment. They're able to work enough to manage a car payment, but not much else beyond that. Then if you get out and you start working, or especially if you go into school, you still don't have a whole lot of money, but try to keep up. Fit in, we still try to spend money. Credit cards come along. Oh, credit cards are very popular on college campuses. Now, especially, even when I was in college several years ago, I'd go to my school campus mailbox and I'd have 4 or 5 offers every week to get some sort of a credit card. No problem. They'd instantly approve me for $5,000 worth of credit. But still come. Even now, I know you get them too. Well, what happens is we start to use these things and we build up $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 worth of stuff, credit. And then something happens in life, and it's wonderful when it does, is we meet someone and we decide we want to get married. Perhaps we talked about that last month. Well, there's a nice chunk of change that has to come down right off the bat for the guys, and that's sometimes put on credit. Engagement ring, and then there's a wedding that's paid for. And a lot of times parents pick up the tab for that, and sometimes there's a lot of small stuff that we go in and we help on. And then if you're going to live together, you got to have a place to live, and so you got a house payment or apartment or some sort of payment. And now all this credit is built up, and we've got $6,000-$10,000 worth of credit, $20,000 worth of credit, and we're trying to make a house payment. We can't do anything except make a minimum payment on our credit cards. All right, let's suppose that the person that we meet went to college and they did everything on school loans. Well, you know, I got a friend and she has $120,000 worth of school loans. She put that on a 25-year mortgage, paying $500 or $600 a month. You know, that's not hard to do. It's easy money to get when you're in college. It adds up. All of a sudden, we got so much money in car payments, and you know, then the kids, we got kids. They get sick, go to the doctor, $200 in doctor bills and prescriptions and all of that. Can't do anything except make a minimum payment. $8,000 on credit at 18%, which is an average amount. Now, you can get a lower interest rate than that, but let's just suppose 18%. So that's pretty common. Making minimum payments would take over 40 years to pay off and would end up costing over $24,000. So all of a sudden, that jam box we bought for $150 went to costing $450. And in 40 years, we won't have that thing. We will have sold it for $15 at a yard sale just to get rid of it so that we could have room for our bigger jam box.
What happens?
Proverbs 22, verse 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is the servant to the lender. We become the servant of the folks that gave us all this money. Matthew 6:24 says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I'm not suggesting that this verse right here tells us that if we're in debt up to our ears, which a lot of people are, that we can't serve God, because we can. But I want to emphasize the point. Sometimes we can get so involved with debt that we have to serve debt. And we can be so consumed with trying to keep up with the lifestyle that we've created that all of our money is accounted for every month. And we have nothing to give. Our funds that we've got available to give to church or to give to somebody who needs it, they're small. And all of our time is accounted for trying to work to make money to keep up all the stuff that we got. Remember the proverb we started earlier. Money is a good servant, but it's a bad master.
There's a solution.
Matthew 6, verses 19 through 21. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Dave Ramsey was a millionaire in his 20s. Early 20s. He owned a Jaguar, drove Jaguar. He owned rental property, bunch of apartments, condominiums, and things of that sort. He said his net worth was somewhere around $4 million. Rental value, the value of his rental property started to go down. Banks wanted their money because he was borrowing all this money to own this stuff. So he went and took out loans to pay the loans that he owed. Well, eventually the folks that took loans wanted their money, so they went and took out more loans. Eventually lost everything. He says that he owned a Jaguar, but didn't have enough money to put gas in. Later in life, he started to rebuild his wealth, and he's written some books, and I want to share some ideas about his thinking with you this morning, briefly. But he said something that's very interesting. And it goes right along with what we talked about in this last verse. He said, if you will live like no one else, later you can live like no one else. If you live like no one else, later you can live like no one else. Later you can live like no one else. Let me get you the skinny on Dave's plan. I'll show you his book I brought today. This is the recent one. This is Dave Ramsey's Total Money Maker. You can buy this anywhere. You can probably get books from then or any of the Christian bookstores there. Christian bookstores, don't they have? He also wrote a book called Financial Peace. That was sort of the front runner of all of this. This is the skinny on Dave's plan. This is how we can get out of debt. This is how we can quit being the servant of debt. One of the first things we got to do is we got to decide exactly how much money it's going to take for us to live. I mean, really, a budget. Make one and stick to it. And he talks about going all the way down to making lunch so that you don't have to buy lunch, because you make lunch cheaper than you can buy lunch. And try to cut down on our spending. Instead of going out to eat too much, go home and eat because it's cheaper. All right? Create a budget, however much it is a month. Maybe it's $500, $700, whatever it is that we got to have to live. I'm talking about living, not bills. And then we take everything else we got and we commit ourselves to starting to pay things off. But not until we create an emergency fund. Because you know and I know that the car breaks down and the alternator goes out, or the refrigerator breaks, the dog gets sick and we don't have insurance on the dog, and so it costs us $500 at the vet. And sometimes we gotta have money. So we create an emergency fund of about $1,000, and we don't touch it unless we have an emergency. In fact, you might even keep it and put it in cash and put it in a picture frame with a sign that says break glass in case of emergency so that we don't touch it. All right? Then what we do is we pay off the smallest bill we've got. Maybe it's the JCPenney card that's got $250 on it we've been making $15 payments on. We pay it off. Now, we pay it off in 3 months. Well, instead of just spending that money, we take that $15 a month that we were paying and we apply it to the next bill. We pay off the next bill. Maybe that was the bill at Lowe's where we had everything else that we bought to fix up the yard. All right, now we've got maybe $90 extra we can pay on the next bill. Maybe that's the car loan for the junker car that we've got around that we want to pay off. We pay that off. All right? Maybe that's a $5,000 payment. Over time, we pay it off. And instead of making the car payment on that thing, which we were having to do, we apply that payment and all the rest to the next car, the good car. We pay off the good car, making maybe a $700 payment or an $800 payment a month on that until it pays off. You know what? It may pay off in a year. And then you keep applying that payment. It built up. Now maybe we're making a $1,500 payment, and we pay that on a home equity line until it's paid off. All right, so we create a huge debt snowball. We're paying off debt right and left. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, there's a lot of stuff that comes into this. What about saving? Well, there's a time for saving, and Dave talks about that in his book. And there's a time to do things like paying off the home mortgage and things of that sort. And all of this is covered in the book. I'm not wanting to tell you everything in the book, but I want to direct you to it. He also says this, because his book is about accumulating wealth. He says, to possess riches is to have the right to say how they will or will not be used. Now friends, let's suppose we accumulate some wealth. Does that mean that we're sinful because all of a sudden we have wealth? No, we talked about people who had wealth. David, Solomon, Job. You remember the 10-talent man, all that he did with the wealth that he had? Good things. You remember the Good Samaritan quote? Good Samaritan had to have money to do good. If our priorities are in order, like we've already talked about, with God being first, we already talked about how Jesus wants us to put God first and love Him with all of our heart and soul and mind. If He is first, and if we truly put our neighbors as ourselves, then we will have the right perspective with wealth, and we'll be able to have a tool to use in service to God. John Wesley, who was a very well-known reformer from several centuries ago, says, make all you can, save all you can, give all you can. If we are caught up in worldliness, and if we are caught up in idolatry and covetousness, and if we are caught up in having material possessions, then we may serve money all of our lives and never be able to give, even though God has blessed us so much. In conclusion, I want us to remember two warnings, two blessings, and a proverb that talks about both. Two warnings. Remember Luke 12:15. Don't forget it. Put it on the refrigerator. And he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. Matthew 6:24. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Two warnings. Two blessings. Proverbs 10:15. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. And then let's remember also the blessing that we can see in the quote of Margaret Thatcher. No one would remember the Good Samaritan if he had only had good intentions. but he had money as well. And finally, money is a good servant, but a bad master. Where are we today when it comes to wealth? Where are we today when it comes to our material possessions? And where are we when it comes to our attitude about truly putting God first? It's my prayer that we all will. It's my prayer that we'll put God first and that we'll put our neighbor on equal planes as ourselves. That means each other and everybody else. And if we do these things, we'll have a truly biblical perspective on life. Jesus calls us to be his servants. James tells us if we draw nigh to God, he will draw nigh to us. He will draw close to us. But he says, cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded, because sin stands between us and God. Ultimately, without Jesus, we can't be close to God. He says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. John 14:6. So if we'd be close to him, we need to remove sin from our life. Repent of it. If we have not come to Jesus, then we need to. Because he is the way. And the way that he set up for us was through baptism. In Romans chapter 6, we get the story and we get the parallel, the metaphor of how Jesus died and he was buried and he rose again. And then we rise from a watery grave of baptism and newness of life. And we know all about how we should strive after the Christian life to put on the Christian graces and things of that sort. But sin sometimes fills our life even then. There we have opportunity for all of us. We have opportunity to make things right with God. We have opportunity to have an invitation song. And if there are needs to come to Jesus through baptism, we have that opportunity. And if we desire the prayers of the church for strengthening, forgiveness, and restoration, we have that as well. Please, let your desires be known. Together we stand and as we sing.